Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Code and the Code Encoders Who Code It. I'm your host, Drew Bragg, and I'm joined today by Brittany Martin. Brittany, would you please introduce yourself to those who don't know who you are?
Absolutely. First of all, so excited to be here. I am a newly minted engineering manager at Shogun. I am the co-host of the Ruby on Rails podcast, and I play roller derby under the pseudonym Merge Conflict, which I'm very proud of. I'm currently suffering a broken ankle from it, but keeping with that name, I feel like it's very on brand. And again, super excited to be talking with you today, Drew.
Well, we're super excited to have you on. Before we jump into everything, for those of you who are new to the show, the way this is going to work is I'm going to ask Brittany three questions. I'm going to ask her what she's working on, what blockers she has. If she doesn't have a current blocker, what was a recent blocker she had and how did she solve it? And then I'm going to give her an opportunity to share something cool, new, or interesting that she's recently learned or discovered. Doesn't have to be coding related, but it certainly can be. So, Brittany, I know you got a lot going on. So, slightly loaded question, what are you working on?
Yeah, so as I mentioned in the intro, I am currently onboarding as an engineering manager at Shogun, which is a page builder for Shopify and BigCommerce. I tweeted this out last week, but I feel like week four for me is like when I find my groove. I know enough to be dangerous. I know enough to get past the really obvious questions, but I can still live in the world of I'm new here, so please be kind to me and tell me things. So I'm currently in that stage right now. I have 9 reports that I'm getting to know, and they're really talented. It feels really good to onboard onto a team where everyone is very talented. I came to a place that was Ruby on Rails that was important to me. I have barely installed the code base, which is wild for me. So I have not written a lick of code, which I think is a good challenge for me as an engineering manager, because that is what I'm supposed to be doing. And so in terms of what I'm working on, this is a team that was quite large before. It was over 200 people, and they scaled down a couple times over the past couple years. They're now down to 80. And so what I'm working on is just like finding the bits and pieces of people who came up with great processes and things like that, making sure it still fits with this current team and just making my team like really efficient. So getting to know everybody and laying down some process. And I think you and I are probably going to talk about hackathons a little bit as well.
And you also have a side project that you've talked about a few times on the podcast. What's going on there?
I do. So I'm a podcast host like yourself, and I realize I'm wildly type A, in case you can't tell. And I really like to be prepared. And so I noticed that I have this whole system around how I manage the podcast. It's multiple spreadsheets, multiple Google Docs. There's email templates. I tend to go back into my emails and find like an old template to invite somebody onto the show. It's a whole process. We send guest packages. It's a whole thing. And I realize I'm a developer. I know how to write code. And I am doing so much unpaid labor around just trying to make this podcast go smoothly. So why not make that into a platform that I can offer other podcast hosts? But of course, I Googled it first. I was like, someone must have solved this already, right? And I got that like sweet moment where like, you're like, there isn't a platform for this. I can make something new. It's not Flappy Bird.
I feel like that is a very rare occurrence to do that Google search and find like, no one's actually solved this problem before. It's a very common to go and find that someone's solved the problem and you're just not like feeling the app. So you decide to build your own in your flavor, or what they built just doesn't do everything that you wanted. So you build it yourself. But to be able in this day and age, especially to be able to Google app for doing X and there be nothing is like you struck gold. That's awesome.
The first thing that my friend asked me is she's like, immediately, did you go look at domains? And for me, I am not a domain parker. I don't know if you are, Drew. I am too cheap for that. So
No, I'm not. I have one domain, and even my podcast is a subdomain of my main domain. I should probably buy the Code Encoders domain at this point, but I'm like, no, it's my same domain for everything, and you can just prefix it with a subdomain.
And the guilt won't work on me either. If I buy the domain and think that it's going to like edge me every year to like actually finish the thing, no, don't worry. I could delete that email very easily, especially on auto renew. No problem.
There you go. Yeah, I don't think the guilt would work on me either.
Well, as an ex-product manager, I have to ask, because I am working on the side project, which is yet to be titled. Are there any manual things that you're currently doing now, Drew, in order to like get this podcast moving?
I mean, yes, a lot of what I do is manual. I've somewhat recently started using Calendarly to do the scheduling, which has been awesome to just when someone says, hey, I want to come on the show, or like, yeah, I'd be down if I offer, I can just send them a link and say, grab what works well for you. Where before that was actually like, well, what about this? Well, no, I got a meeting. Well, what about that? Yeah. And like, this was a good addition. I think the thing I spend the most time doing right now is the post-release marketing, I guess you would call it, where I'm like, okay, I got to post to Twitter and then I got to retweet it for my personal account. And then I got to go to Reddit for Ruby and Rails and post it there. And I got to go to LinkedIn and post it there. And I got to go somewhere else and post it there and try and get it in a couple of newsletters. And that is probably the most time consuming thing now, where it used to be editing actually, but Paul is the best thing to ever happen to me.
Yeah,
ever,
but you also have to email Paul the file, right?
I mean,
that's a whole thing, right? Like I have to remember to do that.
That's true. Yeah, yeah, that is true.
So the reason I wanted to build this side project was to help myself, but also I am obsessed with Andrew Culver's project Bullet Train. Went to Rail SaaS like you did. And I am totally drinking the fire hose from that. I love the idea of just this framework generator. And I had a call with him last week where I told him, hey, I'm working on this podcast host app. I'm not happy with how I did the domain modeling. I'm going to start the app all over again. I have started this app again probably 5 times, Drew. And it is so fun. And he's like, that was the whole point of Bullet Train. That's the point, is because you don't want to get trapped in your bad domain modeling decisions and you learn more as you start working on it. So in the past, I wish I had the page right here just so I could show it to you on video, but it's all these sticky notes. I mean, it looked like Charlie from It's Always Sunny. Like it it was bad.
I have that in my head now and it's so perfect.
It was like you tie an episode to a host and to a show, and then there's questions and plans, and it was a whole thing. And so I just kept adjusting that domain modeling. So now that I'm on the next pass, instead of like going right into domain modeling, I'm taking a different approach. And instead, I'm just going to focus on the onboarding process for a little bit. What's it like creating an episode as a host? Nothing in the episode. But what's it like for me to try to share that episode with a guest? Because I think that's a hard problem and something that I've talked about on my own show about what to do with like guest users. And so in some ways, I guess my whole point is I'm excited to work on this project because I'm working on problems that I actually find interesting.
There you go. That's the dream. That's what everyone should do as a side project, is find something interesting so that it never feels like work. It's just fun. It's something you get to do for fun. That is very cool. But I'm also very interested about your new role and your new company. And because you were at Texas for a while, how long were you there?
2.5 years. I was one of those crazy people that switched jobs in 2020. So
who does that?
I know.
That's exactly when I joined Within 3. So what kind of triggered the switch? Was it that Shogun kind of came up and you were like, I can't pass on this opportunity? Were you kind of like, eh, I've done my thing at TextUs, time to move on? Was TextUs doing layoffs or internal restructuring or anything like that?
Very candid question.
Sorry, I mean,
it's a very fair question. So the reason that I decided to depart TextUs is because I joined as an engineering lead. I was half an ISC and half a lead, so half a manager. And then about a year and a half being there, I got promoted to engineering manager. And my role definitely changed a lot, where I was very focused on people. I had taken over like managing the front end team and whatnot. And we had brought in like different people over that time. So for a while there, we didn't have a product team. I didn't have a boss. Like it was a very different world. And so then we started regrowing the team, and I was the only engineering manager. So towards the beginning of 2023, we decided to hire a second engineering manager, which I thought was great. And I kind of saw it as a sign that like this team is in a good place. I had spent so much time hiring that team. It was from 3 to 14 people. And they weren't going to be hiring anytime soon. And I was like, I think we're good here. I think we've set this team up to be successful. For me, my ambition, Drew, is to get to director of engineering. That is my goal. I want to be a director of engineering and I want to earn it. And I just didn't think my role at TextUs was going to get me there, just because I had been there for quite some time. I didn't see a pathway to get there. And I wanted to go to an organization with many engineering managers that I really gelled with that could coach me to get to that next level. Now, I'm not saying that I'm going to get director of engineering at Shogun. We have that. But it was important for me because I didn't have a director of engineering at Textus. I wanted someone to be able to look up to.
That makes sense. That is one of the reasons why I left my last job was I didn't feel like there was that someone helping me grow and showing me the things I don't know and helping me get to that goal of the next level of engineering. So certainly from the managerial side too, I think it's still very important to have those types of mentors. And it's great that you were able to find it. What is the company like internally? Is it very agile? Give us your managerial spiel.
Yeah, it is agile. So I'm coming off of a Kanban organization. So this is my first experience with Jira. Can you believe it? I'm 38 years old and have never touched Jira.
And now you have to. I'm so sorry for everything you're about to experience. So sorry.
Very lucky that my partner, who is a software engineer, also works in Jira. So my first week, I would call him over and be like, Mike, I'm in a view. I don't know how to get out of it. But in all seriousness, it is agile. So it is setting up sprints and doing daily stand-ups, which is definitely an adjustment for me. And it's fine. Like, I don't mind it at all. I think the big adjustment for me is that this team spans many more time zones than I'm used to. We have full teams in Europe. So you're talking to people way out there who are finishing their day at 10 o'clock Eastern. And then I have the majority of my team is Pacific time zone. So really, seeing someone in the Eastern time zone, you end up being a bridge between those two teams.
Do they do any kind of mandatory overlap on those days? I know a lot of remote, when it's like worldwide remote, will say, you can work anywhere, but we want you to have at least 4 hours in this time zone. Is there anything like that?
It's really Slack intensive. And so the idea is that there should be a lot of asynchronous communication that is happening. There are definitely meetings. There are four engineering managers and there is 1 hour shared between all four of us. And so like our weekly meeting is during that 1 hour. I've gotten really good at scheduling messages so that it hits at 9 a.m. to the person who's out in Europe. I love doing a creepy scheduled message. I don't know if you ever do them. It is so fun.
Like I forget. I send messages and I'll just be like sending them without thinking like, oh yeah, when they sign back on, they'll see this and it'll be great. And then their dot will turn green. And I'm like, no, you weren't supposed to sign on to see this. This is a tomorrow problem. And I'm like, I should have scheduled. I always forget to schedule sends.
And then like my one feature request is like, well, can Slack tell the person it was a scheduled message? And then I realized that they'll never do that because all the times you're being thoughtful and scheduling a message of like happy birthday or like happy anniversary, you wouldn't want that to come across as a scheduled message. And these are the kinds of things I think about as a people manager. So,
oh my.
But yeah, in terms of Shogun, I am a Shogi, which is such a word. I actually quite love it. I love the little nickname things. I think it's great for culture. This team is really, really culture. They really lean into that culture. Like I just got added to a Slack channel today that we're having a virtual mixer at the end of the month. I'm probably going to teach a tiramisu making class during that virtual mixer. So like,
I kind of want to go to that.
Yeah, I know you do. They've always been remote. And that's a difference to me because Textus was in person and then was forced into remote. It's different for me being at an organization that's been remote the whole time.
Yeah, there is definitely a lot of culture things that you lose when you're not in the same room as people. And it takes a very deliberate effort to make it, to have a really good, tight culture like that remote. So that is awesome that you were able to find a company. Was that kind of one of your, I'm going to go look for a job. These are my checklist items that I absolutely need.
I can admit to you that I was not looking for a job. Okay. This was the well-written email from our recruiter. Sent it to me, just beautifully written. But you're right. I do have a couple of things that were on my checklist. Definitely remote first was one of them. Has to be in my compensation range. Really, for very few exceptions, I wanted Rails. And this sounds ridiculous. I wanted React because like I was very familiar with that ecosystem coming off of Textus. I had been hiring a lot in it. I knew a lot of problems that are in the React ecosystem, a lot of things they solve for. So I was excited to see that they were React Rails.
Okay. That's funny. That's like, I am also got to be Rails. and then gotta not be React.
Isn't that hard though?
It's
right?
So hard. I've recently changed the tune to be like, it's got to be React only where it makes sense. Otherwise, no React.
So I'm going to lean into that, though. Have this debate with my partner all the time. We might as well record it and have the debate here.
Let's go.
Are you a full stack engineer?
Yes.
Okay. That's a rarity. I feel like the industry is moving away from that again.
Maybe. I think that there's always been, even if you were a full stack engineer at any point in time, I think there's always like, oh, I lean more back end or I lean more front end. This is where I like to be. But to me, a full stack engineer is someone who's comfortable working on both the sides of the stack. If I say, hey, this problem is almost all back end, full stack engineer can go and be comfortable and do it. Conversely, if it's front end engineering, they can go and they can do it. And like maybe a front end engineer would be slightly more specialized and could get it done maybe a smidgen faster. Same with the back end. But to me, full stack's always just been like, are you able to complete a feature that has both front end and back end without bringing in another engineer?
So this job and my last three jobs, you're either front end or back end.
Wow.
Like I haven't worked with a full stack engineer, I don't know, ever.
Wow.
Just because I tend to hire people who are very passionate about one or the other, and it just makes the work division really easy. So I'm curious, like, how do you do estimates when it's both? How are you keeping up on both communities? Like, it just seems like a lot of work, Drew.
It is. I would be the worst person to answer how we do estimates because my particular team does not do agile estimating anything. We kind of just fly by the seat of our pants and go where there are fires, which is both a lot of fun and also can be really terrible. But I don't actually know how the other teams do their estimating on that front. I think they just figure it out based on, okay, there's 4 or 5 people on this team. What do we think as far as this front-endy stuff, this back-endy stuff, and people who are more comfortable in their specific domains chime in more? For me, it sort of doesn't matter if it's front-end or back-end. This is my estimate. This is how long it's going to take. But as far as staying on top of the community, I stay on top of the Ruby and Rails community, and then I dip my toe into like the JavaScript, HTML, CSS, the front-endy community whenever I'm just like, yep, I've got a lot to do over here and I am going to dive into that community. I definitely can't stay on top of all of it.
You can't. It's just not fathomable for one developer. And I don't know, for me, going back to my side project, why I like working on it with Bullet Train so much is it's generating all those views and those animations for me. So it looks good. Yeah. Because Drew, I'm so bad.
Same. Yeah, I think that might be the ultimate, are you a full stack or are you a front end engineer? Is like, how's your design skills? If I give you like a hand-drawn scribble of the idea that I have, will you be able to make it look good without direction, or are you going to need to tap on a designer? Because like I will always need to tap on a designer to make something look good. But there are definitely engineers on the team that are like, nope, verbally tell me what you want and I can make something that looks really good. And I'm like, I can't. And I've had situations where I've done everything I can. This is as good as it's going to look. And then like a designer will be like, hey, if you bump that border up by 1 pixel, it'll look a lot better. And it's like a completely different page. And I'm like, it was 1 pixel on a border. Are you serious? So that might be it. That might be the big line in the sand of like, can you operate as a designer too?
Yeah. See, I have a curse and someone can argue with me about this. I like to think that I'm a tastemaker. I could look at a thing and tell you whether or not it looks good or not. I just can't get it there. I have a high bar. When I go to conferences to speak, I actually purchase design templates in order to use. So I have a cohesive look to my conference templates. That is incredibly important to me. And like I said, tastemaker.
Oh, God.
But can't pull off the design.
I'm now just panicking about the fact that you've seen my slides from the times I talk. And it's like, yeah, I just use whatever Obsidian generates as slides from my markdown files. What are colors? Oh, no. So in addition to using a template, I'm also going to have to change how I build my slides.
It's worth it.
Okay.
Hey, coding coders. Are you a seasoned developer who misses regional Ruby conferences? Or a Ruby enthusiast looking to attend your first? I'd like to invite you to Blue Ridge Ruby, a brand new regional Ruby conference coming to Asheville, North Carolina, June 8th and 9th. This is a 2-day single-track conference featuring 10 fantastic speakers, plus lightning talks. Asheville is a great mountain town with a solid food and craft beer scene. If you stick around for the weekend, we'll be doing some optional group activities on Saturday, June 10th. Conference tickets are $2.99, and you can find out all the details at blueridgeruby.com. Thanks.
You've got a lot of cool things going on at the new role. You're starting to get very dangerous, which is a lot of fun. And you've got a very fun side project. What do you have by way of blockers for one or both?
It's funny. It's almost like a reverse blocker for me right now. Because I have the broken ankle, I have nothing but time because I can't leave the house. But in all honesty, I would say for blockers, it's really hard for me to be the new person. I am very much used to being the person who knows everything. Oh, crap, we're in this crazy situation. If only this weird lady remembered this ticket that someone filed and then closed 4 years ago or so, you know, like I very much tend to be that person. And so I would say that's my blocker right now, is having to be humble about being wrong as I'm onboarding into a new organization. And it's always very weird to be the newer person than the people that are reporting to you.
I can imagine that. There's got to be a degree of awkwardness to that of like, hold on, I don't know. Let me go ask my direct report.
I would say the second thing for us is that this company has done a really cool thing in that they had two products and then they decided that they were going to pivot and only work on the one product because it was doing really well. So the team that was working on the other product, they're moving over to this product and they now work for me. And so they've been working on it since January. So it hasn't been that long. So this team has gone through a massive change, Drew. You know, like they're working on a different product, different process, all of it, right? I am not going to slam into this place and just start making changes. I am starting with very little changes to start out with. They didn't have any set pairing rotation or anything like that. And that has worked really well for us at TextUs. And so that is the one thing that I instituted right off the bat. I went to my boss and said, hey, can I get a budget for Tuple? And I'm going to institute these pairing sessions. We're going to do them for 2 weeks. And if they're working well, we're going to keep them. I like to make change. I'm a fan of change. Okay. But knowing that this team has gone through a lot of change, I'm going to kind of sit back and learn for a little bit. And so in some ways, I'm putting up my own blocker.
That's a great first change, instituting Tuple. I think that was a really big improvement that we had at work when we brought Tuple in, because we were pairing over Zoom and it was like, no, I don't know how you've been doing this, but here's this really cool thing. It's specifically designed for this. The right tool for the right job makes a huge difference, and Tuple is wonderful.
I'm having PTSD of being over Zoom, being like, you know, that tab, no, that arrow, the very left, keep going up. You're so close.
Yes. To be fair, there's still a little bit of that because I pair very frequently with someone on my team who uses Vim exclusively, Vim and Tmux, and I can do very basic navigation in Vim, but the moment it's like there's three screens up at the same time and I don't even know how to move between them and I like click something with a mouse and it doesn't work, I'm like, I got nothing. Can you click into that tab and go to line 35 for me? Cool. And now I can press I and do what I need to do.
Oh, see, that didn't even occur to me that someone could be using it, like, because I'm working with React developers, which, by the way, you're not a React developer if you don't use VS Code. I've learned this.
Like, well, okay.
I cannot find a single React developer that does not use VS Code. If you were one of those people, please tell me because I'm very interested. It was one of my recurring interview questions. But in all seriousness, like I got very used to navigating around VS Code, RubyMine, Sublime, all that. But yeah, I mean, that's a really good point, Drew, that if you can't move around in somebody's editor, that makes things really hard.
Like I said, we pair frequently, so it's pretty easy for us to just figure out whoever's got their editor open, they're going to handle kind of the navigation part. So that's fine. We pair a little differently, but I'm used to just hijacking the mouse and being like, well, if we look at over here and highlighting or whatever, and then we go to Vim and I'm like, I got nothing. I know how to like go in and out of insert mode and I can do some visual highlighting. That's it. That's all I got. I know how to exit Vim. That's what I know how to do. And I'm very proud of in Vim is I know how to exit. That's an interesting blocker. The idea of being so new that you kind of are like, I don't know how to act like my normal self. How do they help you mitigate that? Or do they help you mitigate that with some sort of like, here's your goals for this week. Here's what we consider a accomplishment for every stage of onboarding, because onboarding looks so different from every company. Some are really good about like, hey, in your first week, you're going to have code in production. Obviously, it's going to be a little different for a manager, but I think those landmarks or milestones are really helpful for negating that feeling of I'm so new and I don't know anything. And I'm like a senior engineer and I'm on this new team. So I now know nothing. And I feel like I'm back in year one of development because I can't do anything. Those milestones are very helpful. So do they have anything in place that's kind of helped you feel less behind?
Absolutely. This team is super gung-ho on Notion, which I do like. I love me some documentation. When I came in, I had an onboarding doc that was written for me. It was 4 weeks long. Me being the competitive person that I am, had it all done in 4 days.
Why am I not surprised?
But in all seriousness, part of that was I had a lot of things on that list of do a talent review with the engineering manager who was currently managing those folks. Set up those one-on-ones, have your initial one-on-one with each of those people, get a good like feeling for the challenges that they're facing, understand which career path they're on. Drew, that's an incredibly important thing for me to know because the projects that I assigned to them, the opportunities I locate for them, very important for me if I need to know like what career path they're on. And even more fun is if they don't know, because then I get to coach them into which one's going to make the most sense. You know, connecting with the design team, connecting with your product managers, you got to be tight. Like those are the people that are going to have your back, the other engineering managers, and then the key people at the company. So head of support and I have like got to be very close and be able to reach out to each other. Head of marketing, head of people, head of sales, chief of staff. So like a lot of those kinds of things. And then this company is really big about reading, which I super appreciate. I am one of the book club leaders for WNB.RB, so I will take any opportunity to read as possible. And so I was assigned to read a book about management. Nice. And I'm almost done, and I will discuss that with my manager. So to me, that's kind of my pull request, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's a perfect list of, I feel like that's the manager side of it. When I see is like, open a pull request, manager's like, connect with this person, connect with that person, start feeling out your team. So it's great, too, that you have a company that at least it sounds like are really on top of onboarding, because I hear some horror stories about onboarding. Sometimes it works out really well because it was a new manager or a new just someone slightly more managerial that's like, oh, this onboarding sucked. We're going to fix it. That's my first thing I'm going to do. And then other places are just like, yeah, I didn't do anything for the first month I was there because I couldn't even get my development environment started and I didn't know who to talk to. And everyone I told about that was like super busy. And by the time I actually talked to my manager, it was 4 weeks after I started. I was like, holy crap. That sounds horrible. I can't imagine that.
That is crazy. And that is part of the reason that I absolutely scour Glassdoor before I join any organization, because onboarding is important to me. They started onboarding emails probably 2 weeks before I even got there. Nice. Just like making sure the equipment I wanted was exactly what I wanted. I had everything I needed when I got started. And you're right. Having a solid onboarding situation is just going to set up for a long career at a company.
Definitely. So I'm sure that onboarding into a new code base, and I know you haven't gotten it running, but I'm sure you've at least looked at it. But onboarding, you've got a book that you're reading. You've got the side project with Bullet Train and all the good stuff going on there. What is, if you had to pick one, and it doesn't actually have to be one, you can do as many as you want, but if you had to pick one thing that was like the coolest, new, or interesting thing that you've discovered recently, what would it be?
Oh man, am I going to be that person who picks ChatGPT?
No, I'm technically, I don't think anyone's picked that yet.
I'm going to say ChatGPT. It is actually really helping me. We're starting to integrate with it at work. And we have a corporate hackathon coming up, which I would love to get your thoughts about while we're recording. But we have a lot of projects around that. And it is amazing to me how many times I go to that OpenAI tab and I'm using it for just the silliest things, Drew. Like, I need to write a birthday message. What do I say? I was trying to come up with a tagline for my side project. And I realized that you can go in there, give them a couple of buzzwords and say like, hey, come up with a tagline for me. My partner came over and he goes, you can just tell it to give you 10 more. I was like, I feel so greedy. It's like, just ask for 10 more. And then you get like a list and you can compare. I see a lot of jokes about a lot of programmer jokes that now we're going to spend more time debugging the code that ChatGPT is writing for us. And that might be possible, but I'm telling you, Once you have faced the situation of staring at a blank page and having no idea what to write, if ChatGPT can help us solve for that, I'm all in. It is not going to solve for everything, but I plan on using it pretty heavily at Shogun, and I think I will end up using it in my side project as well.
Yeah, I'm curious in the different ways that you're using it. So you're like birthday message or coming up with buzz. Like, that's actually not even something that I've thought to ask. I feel like every time I've interacted with it, I'm like, I'm just, speaking of staring at a page, I'm staring at the input. Like, I don't know what to ask you. I don't know what to put into this thing to get any kind of me. And other people are like, I've built an entire product around it. I use it to write my tests. I'm like, how?
I had to write a difficult email to one of my reports at my last job. I had it help me with that. I had it help me write my performance review. It wrote my resignation letter. You name it, Drew, it can help you. And in some ways, it's not that it's going to get it perfect, but it goes back to the design discussion we were talking about and having taste. You can look at the text and say, this is bad or good. And if you know why it's bad, then you can make it good. And now you're rolling. But like, can you imagine a world where you and I are going to interview somebody and we just say, hey, what kind of questions could I ask this person that are not out there documented already?
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
What kind of news has happened that's relevant to this person? And I could ask them a question about it. Like, how cool would that be? Now, the only thing that jams you up is it doesn't know current events.
Right.
So I've had to remind myself that when the Silicon Valley Bank thing happened, I went to it and I said, what's the deal with Silicon Valley Bank? And it goes, Silicon Valley Bank is a highly esteemed bank. And I was like, oh no, it doesn't know.
Oh no. That could be a very funny way of like almost time machining, just talking to someone that doesn't have any idea what's happened in the past. I don't know. It's trained up to what, 2001?
2019, right?
Oh wow, it's that old. Okay. I thought it was slightly newer than that, but okay. So
you just need to find a bunch of people who are canceled in the last year and then ask about them.
Yeah, there you go. That's funny. And I guess that's a use case for it that I hadn't thought about, because I guess I'm just so inundated by everyone going like, oh, I asked it to refactor this method, or I asked it to build a class that did X, or I asked it to write my tests. I don't know. Those always felt weird to me. I'm like, writing tests is like a good part of making sure my design is good for this class that I've just written. Like, if I don't write the test, if I just have it write it for me, I'm going to miss out on so much like interaction that I feel like I actually lose value there. But the doing the stuff that is hard for me, where it's like, oh, hey, how do I like send this text to someone that says, hey, I'm sorry, I forgot to respond to your text 4 weeks ago. That's actually a great use case and perfect for me.
Yes, it is. It really is. It's the little stuff that you sit there and you obsess over that text or that email, an invitation to be on your show, like just stuff like that. It's really helpful for and can really help you at work as well. We had an engineer who was asking a lot of questions about why does this Ruby method work this way? And someone goes, and they just threw it in ChatGPT and they're like, well, here's the answer. In some ways, it's a super search as well. The one thing that I have noticed that people don't get right is they think ChatGPT is coming up with these original answers. It is plagiarism, to be clear. It's getting stuff from somewhere. So people who think that they're able to like generate brand new content and be able to like market and sell that content, no. It's plagiarized.
Yeah.
But it's really helpful plagiarism, right? Because I don't know the right things to Google.
Yeah, it's definitely not going to have any original ideas. It's just going to take a collection of other ideas and put them in an order or a sorting that you might not have experienced it before, which is like the weirdest part about it. People are building businesses around it. I'm like, you're building businesses around other people's stuff. But I guess that's what we've always done. It's definitely one of those things. I just did the Stack Overflow developer ecosystem survey thing, state of development survey.
Just to get that Ruby vote in? Thank you.
Oh, well, yeah, of course.
Thank you for your service.
Of course. No, but there was a lot of AI questions. They were like, how are you using AI? And I checked a lot more boxes than I thought I was going to, considering like I barely go to ChatGPT because I never know what to put in it. But I checked a lot more boxes than I was expecting. And they had a lot of questions about like, hey, how do you think AI can improve your workflow? And for me, it was very much like, I don't think it will until it starts doing these couple of things. But then the other thing I said for one of the questions, I don't remember what it was, but it was about early career devs being able to articulate their questions and organize their thoughts into something coherent is something that you only learn how to do by doing a lot. And if you're just throwing not garbage into ChatGPT and then either using whatever it tells you, or you're sending whatever it says to ask to your senior or your manager, you're screwed if you don't have an internet connection then. Because if you ever lose access to it, if it ever isn't there, you're going to have a hard time being able to formulate your question. So I almost think if you're an early career dev, don't lean on it too heavily. It can help with boilerplate code, but
I disagree. If it's teaching you, if you're not just doing the Stack Overflow copy paste, because that always has been the fear, right? That people aren't actually learning, that they're copying and pasting from Stack Overflow and not seeing why it's not working. If it's teaching you, you're now the model, I'm okay with it. But if you're just copying and pasting, yeah, absolutely. Don't lean on it so hard.
At least in my experience has been people get stuck at their level. And it's like, well, I'm writing all this code. I'm like, are you writing it? Or are you finding the pattern in our code base and putting it over here, copy and pasting, where you go into Stack Overflow? You wrote this method. It's an interesting approach. Why are you doing this? Oh, I don't know. I found it in this other file and it does the job. And it's like, so you're not learning. And that's where I think if people start doing that, but with ChatGPT, that's super dangerous, because it's like, I can build an entire app by explaining it to ChatGPT and I'm good to go. And it's like, very much doubt it. Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. We did that the other day where someone was stuck on, so common interaction, which is so funny. One of our developers would be like, I'm stuck. I can't figure out what I need to do in React here. And they'll post the code snippet and our PM will grab it and throw it in ChatGPT and then answer. And you know what? It works. Is it pretty? No. So there it is. But that might spark the idea of I know what I need to do now because I know why this is not pretty. I can fix that.
There you go.
We always want to start from working. It takes a more experienced developer to not be satisfied with working. You have to be satisfied with quality.
Yep. I'm trying to drill that home with some members of my team right now. But you brought up that you're going to be putting on a hackathon, which I feel like we have to get into. So what's going on with that?
Yeah, so this is something that Shogun is experimenting with. They want to do it on a quarterly basis. They actually got together as a team in Cancun in Q1. So I missed that, which is very sad. But,
wait, for the hackathon?
Or as a team offsite, but they had a hackathon in
okay.
It.
Okay, so. that's still awesome.
Yeah, everybody would apply right
now.
Yeah,
we do a hackathon and they fly everyone out to Cancun and you just sit on the beach and hack. And I'm like, sign me up. Let's go.
Okay. But in all seriousness, so they did do an in-person hackathon in Q1. So that was their second hackathon. And now we're coming up on Q2. And so we're doing the next iteration of the hackathon. Of course, there's going to be an AI theme to it. However, there's been some debate. When you're doing a corporate hackathon, how do you get away from it not being ship features really fast as opposed to actually working on something that you're interested in? Do you ever do that at your job? Have you done corporate hackathons before?
The only corporate-y hackathon I've participated in is one of Shopify's hackathons. It was the one that Nick did Scarpe on, and he basically got permission to as long as it's open source, doesn't matter who you have working on it. So he was able to bring me in. And that's about the closest I've gotten to a corporate hackathon. We don't do them at Within 3. I don't know if we should, but it's something that sounds pretty cool, but yeah, I just haven't gotten to do it.
Yeah, I think it's all about just aligning the team on what the purpose is. So if the goal is to get all these engineers to experience ChatGPT, which, by the way, we all have the premium licenses they give us, so it's very nice. That I'm okay with. I think it's really tough with an expectation that a group of developers who don't normally work with each other, remember, stretched across time zones, would work on a project that would be interesting to demo the next day. As a relatively slow-paced developer, that feels like a lot.
Yeah.
And so then we just need to align on what is the goal here? Is it to bond with the other team members? That's cool. The problem there is you don't have anything to demo at the end of the day. And so it is a challenge. And I'd like the PMs to get involved because having someone project manage for you is nice, but I don't know. It's hard, Drew. I don't know how to solve for that because it does sound appealing and fun, but I want to make sure that tech debt projects and like full-fledged features that are supposed to make it to the roadmap aren't sneaking into a hackathon.
That's an interesting consideration of saying, like, we really need to try to make sure this doesn't end up just being work. Let's see how much work you can crank out in this amount of time.
But should it be work? It should be like attributed to the company, right?
I mean,
because you're being compensated to work at the company. I can see both sides.
Yeah.
That's why I'm like currently noodling it so hard.
I mean, I think there's a lot of value in developers just building things that aren't work. You spend 8 hours, 10 hours, whatever flavor of developer you are, working on your work projects. You know, sometimes people end up not doing side projects because they're like, I've already spent so much time working on. And I get at least a pretty big bump in productivity when I get to go and work on something else, whether it's open source. When I came back from working on Scarpe for 3 days, like I was flying through the rest of my work. I was so energized by like the fun of working on something that was so different than my day to day. That I think like, yeah, you're being compensated, but you're going to return it back to the company by being slightly more productive and more motivated. And you're going to learn things in that project that you might not have had the opportunity to learn in your day to day. So I think the company, it might not look like I give you this, you give me that kind of transaction. But I think that the company does get a really big benefit from having their engineers get to just work on a passion style project that doesn't have to be directly tied to work.
So you're helping me with my argument. So I don't feel passionately one way or the other. Like I can play devil's advocate for either side. And so, I mean, that's part of being a manager. You're looking out for your developers and you're also looking out for the business. And so as we start to prep for this hackathon, like I want to circle back with engineering leadership and say like, what is the goal here? Because I want to make sure I'm really selling that to the developers so they feel excited to work on it.
Yeah, I think if the developers aren't excited to do it, then it's kind of just a waste of time. But if you can get the developers excited, then you're going to reap some pretty cool benefits, I think, in my experience, from doing a hackathon like that.
I agree. And a big part of the hackathon was just that bonding experience where you're working with other developers. Uh-huh. Did I just zero that out by instituting pairing sessions? Maybe I did. So like, I said I wasn't going to make big changes, but like, it's funny. You can tip one domino and you can tip another one down. It's funny in that way, isn't it?
It very much is. Well, is there anything else you want to talk about? Do have a few minutes if you want to.
No, I think that's everything. I so enjoyed being here today. Drew, you have grown so much as a host, and I'm just so dang proud of you. And I just, listeners, listen to Drew. He's amazing. I think this podcast has a big future in front of it, and I appreciate you so much.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate you and all the support you've given me in this, and Paul and the guys from Remote Ruby and everything. Like, I have definitely not done any of this on my own.
Actually, I have one last ask. Will you please go on Remote Ruby with me?
Oh, yeah, done. Yeah, I've been looking for an excuse Remote Ruby for years at this point.
We're going to show up on one of their Zoom calls without them knowing. Yes. Like, we're just going to show up. So, cool. Listeners, you'll see us soon.
Yeah, we're going to go crash a podcast recording. We'll be right back. Awesome. Brittany, how can folks find you on the internet that isn't the Ruby on Rails podcast?
Yeah, so I have a website, brittanymartin.dev. And that links to my Twitter and to, of course, the podcast. I'm on Mastodon as well. So Twitter and Mastodon, Britt J. Martin, terrible Twitter handle, but I've committed to it. So it is what it is. And then I am Regular Lady on GitHub.
Regular Lady. Okay. That's for another podcast episode.
It sure is.
Gonna have to change it to Merge Conflict to go with your broken ankle. All right. Well, it was awesome to have you on. We will definitely have to do this again after your hackathon. You can let us know how it went.
Awesome. Thanks, everyone.